Our topic, as announced, is the seed of Abraham. This is one of the promises made in the Old Testament that all of us treasure. In thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. Brother Paul, in his prayer, referred to our most holy faith. There can't be a better expectation and faith than to recognize God's plan to bring life and blessing to every person who has ever lived. I was pleased to recall that in the 6 points of 1829, that they look forward to the establishment of an earthly kingdom, even for the brute creation. And we have magnified that appreciation of the kingdom hope through the harvest message even more wonderfully. Now, this is a promise in Genesis 22, verse 18. And this is the subject for much of what Paul said later in the book of Galatians. Now, in Galatians chapter 3, verse 16, Paul says something that does cause me some pondering a little bit. In Galatians 3:16, Paul says, "Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. He saith not, and to seeds as of many, but as of one, and to thy seed, which is Christ." Now, the reason this surprises me a little bit is because the seed of Abraham is going to be all comprehensive. Everyone that receives faith in Messiah is going to be ultimately counted as part of the seed of Abraham. We'll talk about that a little further later. So why then does Paul specify that it's to not seeds as of many, but as of one? Well, I presume that the point is that Paul recognized that all of the direct descendants of Abraham were not the seed of Abraham. There was Ishmael. There were 6 sons of Keturah. But only Isaac was really the seed of promise. And so Isaac represents Jesus himself, singular, the seed of promise through which everyone else was to be blessed. But then, as you well know, when Paul gets on to verse 29, he says in Galatians 3:29, "If you be Christ's, then are you Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise." So the seed is going to multiply greatly by those who come into Christ and ultimately include everyone that receives Messiah by faith. But the singular seed is Jesus. Those who come into it are going to swell to be billions, literally. Now, finally, in Galatians 4, verse 28, "Now we, brethren, as Isaac, singular, was, are the children of promise." And of course, in the kingdom, that will expand to the world of mankind. Now, we have on the screen here a mention of Jacob. Now, Jacob was, of course, the son of Isaac. So the descent went from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob. And thereafter, the descent went to all the 12 sons of Jacob, counted as God's people. However, the true singular seed would come through Judah, and that would be finally Jesus. Now, we often think of the seed of Abraham as the stars of heaven and the sand of the seashore. Well, that's true, and we'll see a little bit later why those are special. But the first mention here in Genesis chapter 13 is a little different. This is the dust of the earth. We don't traditionally pay as much attention to that description, but there it is. It's in Genesis, the 13th chapter, starting with verse 15. But let's give a little background for this experience. Abraham had come into the land of promise, and he had with him Lot, his nephew. That Lot was the child of Abraham's deceased older brother. And they both had a lot of herds, and there were some problems because of the herdsmen and the size of their flocks. So finally, they decided amicably to separate, and Abraham said, as a very kindly patriarch, "You, Lot, my nephew, you make the first choice. And then whatever you don't take, then I'll go to another place." So, of course, Lot made a bad choice. temporarily it looked real good. He looked over the fertile plains of the Jordan Valley. Now, if I look there from the Mount of Olives, I don't see it all that fertile. But in those days, it was better before the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. It was a bad choice because they were men of sin down in that area, and Lot suffered greatly for it. But after Lot was gone, in verse 13 observes that Sodom was wicked. Then verse 14, the Lord said to Abraham after the Lot was separated, lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed after thee. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth. So when God is talking about the actual land, look north, east, west, south, that land is going to be to you. Then his description was the dust of the earth. I think that that refers to natural Israel. Now, that was a thought that, you know, we've had for 40 or 50 years. But I was interested to know that my grandfather, Frederick Rice, who I knew only when I was young, had the same view. As I looked in a printed talk, a manuscript of a talk that he had given years earlier. Now we find one more reference to the dust of the earth, and that's in Genesis chapter 28, verse 14. And that was given not to Isaac, who would represent the spiritual seed, but it was given to Jacob, who represents the natural seed. Now, we're going to read that verse, 28:14, and this is the experience when Jacob is fleeing from his brother Esau. And there's the Jacob ladder episode. And then in verse 14, God says through the angel, thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and you will spread abroad to the west, the east, the north, and the south. And in thee and thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. So we have a second repetition of the dust of the earth. But again, notice the directions, east, west, north, south. He's talking about the land. When you talk about the land of Israel, then the dust of the earth, natural Israel, is the recipient, and that's the description. And I think that this tells us natural Israel is going to have a place in blessing all the families of the earth. Now, of course, we know the church will do that beyond the veil, but it'll be a double-pronged effort. Now, in the division of the land of Israel, when they came into the land of Canaan across the Jordan, ultimately, there was a group called Simeon that had their inheritance within the tribe of Judah. That is, they have a circle area of Simeon inside, encompassed within the area of Judah. And I think that shows how natural Israel is going to be part of the leadership of spiritual Israel, on the other side of the veil, Judah, the kingly tribe. But Israel's going to have a special place in the kingdom. Now, on the chart of the ages, we all see that. There's Israel restored, and then mankind, of course, there as well. And through Israel, much of mankind is going to be blessed. Okay, go on a little farther. We get the stars of heaven, and that was something about Isaac. And when you look at where the stars of heaven appear in the Old Testament, it is only with respect to Isaac. We first see it in Genesis, the 15th chapter. Verses 1 through 5 is the narrative. It's too long to read the whole thing. But Abraham is wondering at this point, why has it been so long and I still have no direct child? Now, this was even before before Ishmael was born. So God says, Abraham wonders, well, maybe my servant, Eliezer of Damascus, might be the heir. And God says, no, it's going to be from your own body. And he brought him forth in verse 5. It says, look abroad to the heaven. And tell the stars if thou be able to number them. He says, that's the way your seed is going to be. And so his seed of blessing is going to come through Isaac. When he's talking about Isaac, he directs his vision to the stars of heaven. Now, you see another reference there on the screen, and that's to Genesis 26, verse 4. Now, Genesis 26, 4 is something that God said directly to Isaac after the passing of his father Abraham. And God addressed Isaac through an angel, of course, and I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of heaven. And I will give your seed all these countries, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. Now notice, he doesn't talk about, look at the land you've got, east, west, north, south, or the land you're abiding in, that'll be given to you. That would be literal Israel. That's what he said concerning the dust of the earth, north, east, west, south. Here he says all these countries are going to be a recipient of the of Isaac. So I think it's just telling us the stars of heaven, the spiritual church, is going to rule the whole world. That's like the Judah class, who's going to be in charge of the kingdom, the regal class, the kingly authority. And Israel, of course, is going to be subordinate to them in blessing the world of mankind. Now we go on to the famous one, the sand of the seashore. That's in Genesis 22:17. A little bit later, we'll look into Genesis 22 in depth. But also in Genesis 32:12. Now let's look at that one, 32:12. This also was to Jacob. Now this surprised me a little bit. If Jacob is the natural seed of Abraham, why doesn't he say again the dust of the earth? But this is Jacob 20 years later than the first promise. 20 years later, Jacob is coming back into the land of promise. He's concerned about meeting his brother Esau, and so he's praying. And then in verse 11, 32:11, he says, "Deliver me, I pray, from my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him." And that's what Israel is like today. They have problem with their brother Esau, the Arabic peoples in picture. And ultimately, it's going to end up real nice. When the day breaks, they're going to embrace and be at peace, and everything's going to be fine. But here's the promise that God repeats to Jacob at this time. "As thou saidst, I will surely do thee good." Verse 12. "And I will make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude." Now, this is to Israel, and yet it's the sand of the seashore, which we would think should be the world of mankind. I think this is telling us that when the kingdom comes, Israel is going to be blessed as part of the world of mankind. Now, they're going to have a superior position politically, helpfully. The kingdom is going to begin at Israel. That's where the nations will come up for their blessing, according to Zechariah, many verses, and also Micah, the fourth chapter, the law shall go forth from Zion and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. But they're still going to be part of the world of mankind, as the sand of the seashore. Now we'll see that again when we look closer at Genesis chapter 22. But I think on his return at the threshold of the kingdom, now Israel is going to be blessed with mankind as part of the sand of the seashore. Okay, now here's a listing of all of the scriptures that talk about the beautiful blessing of everyone through the Abrahamic seed. Genesis 12:3, "And these shall all the families of the earth be blessed." 18:18, "All the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him." 22:18, "And thy seed shall all nations bless themselves." "And thy seed shall all nations bless themselves." Now, I haven't been deeply attentive to the fact that in some cases it's "they will be blessed," and some cases they will bless themselves. But you'll see the RVIC makes a point of this. And in Genesis 22:18 and 26:4, that is the expression in the Hebrew. They'll bless themselves. That is, by becoming part of the seed of Abraham. And then finally, 28:14, "And thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed." Now, I noticed this paragraph in the foreword to volume 6. You won't see this very often. It's not as though the reprints are replete with this kind of an expression. But here it is in the 1916 foreword, where Brother Russell picks up on the point of bless themselves. We'll read the whole thing. This is from page 2 of the foreword, 1916. "All who will come into harmony with the Lord will be counted as part of the earthly seed of Abraham until finally, by the end of the millennium, all exercising faith and obedience will be known to the Lord as the seed of Abraham." Quote. Now, he doesn't tell you where he's quoting from. It's got to be either Genesis 22:18 or 26:4. And the quote isn't precise exactly. But here's his rendering. Quote. "In becoming that seed shall all the families of the earth bless themselves." Now, I think that that's right. I think that is true. Sometime in the Abrahamic statements, it's others will be blessed. And sometimes they bless themselves. How do they bless themselves? By becoming people of faith and entering into Christ. Now we all know Galatians 3:29, we read it earlier. If you be Christ, you are Abraham's seed and heir according to the promise. We know that about spiritual Israel. But apparently this is also going to be true for those of natural Israel and those who become proselyted, as it were, to become Israelites by faith. I don't think genetically, but by faith in the kingdom. And then they will become part of the Abrahamic seed that's going to ultimately encompass the whole world of mankind. Now we're going to look here at the journey that Abraham made. Now this is a map of the Middle East. You all know that Abraham came from Ur of the Chaldees here, somewhere in the area of Babylon. It's Babylon on the map, but it's in the general area. And then he was told to leave that country and go to the land of promise that God would show him. Now I remember a discourse by Brother Carl Hagensick years ago, emphasizing that Abraham may not have known precisely where he was going. He just says he was called to go out from Ur to a land that I will show you. I don't know how much information Abraham had as he left Ur. Maybe Brother Carl has a point there. But at any rate, Abraham left with his father. I think it was part of the whole clan that left. All but his elder brother, Haran, who had died in Ur before they left. But the whole family journeyed up what we often call the Fertile Crescent, because it's between the two rivers, the Euphrates and the Tigris. And they traveled northward, and you see that on the map they stopped in a place called Haran. Now, is it a coincidence that there's a place called Haran, the same name as Abraham's deceased brother? I don't think so. I don't think it's a coincidence. I think they came to this place, settled there, and named it after Abraham's deceased elder brother. I think Haran reminds us of the others in Abraham's family that were not so favorably blessed. And I think ultimately it's going to be a picture of the nation of Israel, but we'll talk about that later. When his father Terah had died, then he was called again to go southward into the land of promise. And when he did, he came to a place called Shechem. Now you'll see that on this map if you're able to look closely and see it. And then down to Bethel. And now we're going to look at another map. Not as nice a map, but a simpler map. And this map is going to show that he left Ur of the Chaldees, then went to Haran, then down to Shechem, and then down to Bethel. Now let's see what happened when he arrived in the land of promise at Shechem. Now this is Genesis 12, verse number 5. Abraham passed through the land under the place of Shechem, under the plain of Moreh, and the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, no longer conditional, no longer, if you do this, then I will bless all the families of the earth. Now the condition is removed. Unto thy seed I will give this land. Natural Israel would get that. And there he builded an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. First time in the experience of Abraham that we have any mention of an altar. Now I think that Haran represents for us the Jewish age, the first stopping point of the seed of Abraham. And that Shechem represents the beginning of the gospel age. The first time there is an altar involved in the plan of God, that is a fulfillment of the altar, the sacrifice of Jesus. Now, I'm going to suggest that these four locations represent four ages in the divine plan. That is, we began with Ur of the Chaldees, and Abraham began in the patriarchal age. And then they journeyed to Haran, which I think represents Israel's status. We'll talk about that more later. And I think that represents the Jewish age. You had to leave the Jewish age, though, and come into Christ to really have this seed take root. So Abraham comes into Shechem, and that's where he builds an altar. And I think that represents the sacrifice of our Lord Jesus. And Shechem, then, would be the place of the gospel age for the stars of heaven class to be developed. Bethel would be the millennial age where he goes next, Bethel representing, that is meaning directly, the house of God. So the house of God will become worldwide in the kingdom to be established. Now, these are the four locations that are mentioned in the narrative. The next thing that happens to Abraham is that he had to go to Egypt. And I think that because of a famine, I think that's a different picture. And there's all kinds of lovely pictures about his visit to Egypt. But this is the end of this picture. Four locations, four ages, patriarchal, Jewish, gospel, and millennial age, encompassed in the promise to Abraham and its fulfillment. Now we're going to turn now to Genesis chapter 22, the famous chapter where Abraham is told to offer his son Isaac on the altar. And we're going to look at a number of things in Genesis 22 that are very specific, that we think refer to the sacrifice of Jesus and its place in the central role of bringing about the blessing of all the families of the earth. Now, in Genesis 22, verse 1, it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham. Now, I prefer the word test Abraham, and said unto him, Abraham. And Abraham said, well, yes, here I am. And he said, take now thy son, thine only son, Isaac, whom thou lovest. He had waited 25 years for this son of promise. He surely loved him deeply. And get into the land of Moriah and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains, which I will tell thee of. Okay, there is no greater test than this. You notice, however, that he asked him to go to a specific place, that is to Mount Moriah directly. And later on in Chronicles, King David is going to have an experience at Mount Moriah. He's going to buy a threshing floor from Ornan at Mount Moriah. And ultimately, that's going to be the place where the Temple of Solomon is going to be built, on Mount Moriah. And that's going to be where all the sacrifices of the Law Covenant, picturing Jesus, were to be given, on Mount Moriah. Now, I don't say that Isaac was sacrificed in the precise location, because he wasn't. Probably. I don't know for sure. Maybe not. It's a general area. But Jesus, when he finally died, did not die at the precise location of the temple. But it was in the general area. It was on the mountains, in the land of Moriah. So I think it's a general description. So that both where Isaac died, where Jesus died, and where the temple was, were in the general area to fulfill this designation of the land of Moriah. Secondly, let's read in verse 3. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and saddled his ass and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering and rose up and went to the place of which God had told him. So Abraham was obedient. Now, we're not told how much dialogue there was between Abraham and Sarah. I'm not sure Sarah was privy to this. I don't know. There is a little story in Jewish narrative that suggests that there was some difficulty between them as a consequence. Well, we'll see. We'll see in the kingdom when we find out all the facts. But this narrative passes over that difficulty. And Abraham took his son and was obedient. It said here, they took two of his young men with him and wood for a burnt offering. Now, when you look in the Old Testament, you'll find that there is three fundamental kinds of offering. There's a burnt offering. That's the first one in Leviticus chapter 1. In Leviticus, in the first seven chapters, you're going to have an explanation of all of the offerings that the tabernacle will embrace. And there are three fundamental ones. The burnt offering first. And then there's going to be a peace offering, and then in chapter 4, a sin offering. In between in chapter 2, there was a meal offering, but we're going to pass that by. It wasn't an animal offering. So these are the three fundamental offerings, a burnt offering, a peace offering, and a sin offering. The first one is the only one that is said to go directly on the wood, and it makes atonement. I'm going to suggest, brethren, that the burnt offering directly is involved with the picture of Jesus on the wood, on the cross, as the ransom given for the world of mankind. Well, who are those two young men taken with him? I'm going to suggest that perhaps those two represent the two classes that are going to be benefited by the sacrifice of Christ, and that would be Jews and Gentiles. Now, you remember, even on the day of Pentecost, there were only Jews, but subsequently with Cornelius, there were Gentiles. When the millennial kingdom opens up for the blessing of everyone, Israel is going to be first to recognize Jesus. They will look unto him whom they pierced, and they're going to be in deep regret that for 2,000 years, they missed it. That's going to be national mourning of the most intense sort. But then the kingdom gradually is going to open up to others, and the Gentiles will recognize the hand of favor at Israel and come for their blessing to receive Messiah as well. Perhaps these two young men. Now in verse number 4, it says, then on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and he saw the place afar off. Now you may remember that Jesus said in John the 8th chapter, verse 56, your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad. Now, when Abraham saw that, where was Abraham chronologically? At this point, everybody will agree. And that is, he was on the third day. He lifted up his eyes on the third day, 3,000 year millennium, and he saw afar off this place. I think that represents prophetically that Abraham saw the redemption to come. If you're going to bless all the families of the earth, that has to include a lot of dead people. That's got to refer to a reclamation from the dead. That's what Abraham pieced it together as. Now, in verse 6, it says, we're going to have to speed up here a little bit. Abraham laid the wood on the back of his son Isaac. And you remember in John 19:17, that John says, Jesus, bearing his cross, went forth unto a place called in the place of the skull, which is called in the Hebrew Golgotha. And then in verse seven, Isaac says to his father, you know, Dad, there's something missing. There's no lamb. And in verse 8, Abraham said, my son, God will provide a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together, and God did. God provided his own son as a burnt offering. And then they made an altar. They put the wood on the altar, and then they prepared Isaac on the wood that's on the altar. Now, in Leviticus 1, verse 8, that's the scripture that tells us of the burnt offering. They shall lay the parts, the head, the fat, in order, upon the wood that is on the fire, that is on the altar. That is never said of any other kind of offering. Only this kind, that is, the burnt offering. Okay, you know the story. You know that Abraham was delivered of the burden of offering his actual son. He was ready to proceed. He lifted up his knife, and the angel intervened. And then when he intervened, and I'm sure he was so thankful, he looked around, and then they found a ram caught in the thicket in verse 13. Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him, a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him for a burnt offering in the stead of his son Isaac. Now that's engaging. And I only learned this maybe a year or two ago from a sister in Alabama. I appreciate the fellowship we had that brought this to my attention. His horns were, of course, beyond his head. So this ram's head was caught in the thicket where there would be thorns. So you remember in Matthew 27:29, when they had platted a crown of thorns on the head of Jesus, they mocked him and said, "Hail, King of the Jews." Well, there's the figurative thorns on the head of Jesus by this ram who's going to be offered, in fact. Well, why thorns? Well, because you remember the curse of Adam. The land is going to bear thorns and thistles, and by the sweat of your brow, you're going to bring forth your meat. And this tells us that Jesus bore the brunt symbolically here, the crown of thorns of that curse. In verse 14, Abraham called the name of the place Jehovah Jireh. That is, God, Jehovah, will provide. And God did provide. God provided his own son for our redemption. And in verse 16, now is the time for the oath that God gave to Abraham. Now, we mentioned before that when Abraham had come into the land, things were no longer conditional. Now God said, no longer, if you do this, I'm going to do it. But now, with the sacrifice, figuratively, of Jesus, now God even swears an oath. Not that it was any uncertain before, but now it is absolutely unquestionable, because the death of Jesus absolutely assures everything else is going to work 100%. No possibility of mistake. And in Hebrews, the 6th chapter, as Paul says, wherein God, willing to show more abundantly the heirs of promise, the immutability of counsel, confirmed it by an oath, and by two immutable things, that is, God's promise, and now his oath, there's no question. The plan of God is impossible of inaccomplishment. By two things, we can be vitally sure. Now in verse 14, no, we've talked about that. Excuse me. Go on to the next part. We have in verse 17, finally the expression, the stars of heaven and the sand of the seashore. That's the way your seed is going to be. And I think those two expressions tell us that from the cross forward, the stars, the heavenly seed, and the world of mankind, including Israel here, the sand of the seashore, will be blessed. No mention of dust of the earth again, because Israel, as dust of the earth, received the land. They got that during the Jewish age. Now, they lost it temporarily. It's going to be restored. It is now, and even more completely in the kingdom. But that's finished. That's a Jewish age picture. They were punished. They'll be delivered again. But the two things remaining after the death of Jesus, pictured by Isaac, are the stars and the sand. Verse 19, they went from there to Beersheba, which means the well of the oath. How, what a fitting place to go after God's oath has been given. And then in verses 20 through 24, he hears again from Haran in the north. It's been a lot of years since we've heard from them. And it turns out that his living brother there has had 12 sons. Well, that's the 12 tribes of Israel. Haran is natural Israel. And those 12 sons represent now the nation of Israel. Hadn't heard from them for a long time, but at the end of the age, there they are again, ready to receive the promised blessing. Oh my goodness, time is going so fast. You know that we have three mothers involved with the children that were born to Abraham. Hagar, her child is Ishmael, the Jewish race. Sarah, the promised one, I mean the mother of the promised child, representing the covenant of her own husband, that is Abraham. You know that Hagar was never really a wife. She was always a bondmaid, just like the Jewish law was always subordinate. Sarah, however, represents the covenant made with her husband, and in particular, the spiritual part of that covenant to bear the stars of heaven. Keturah, she was a concubine at first. All her children were born as concubines. You find that in the listing in Chronicles where it gives the genealogy. And so the children of Keturah are really produced during six children, 6,000 years of sin and death. But later, after Sarah's passing, she became a full wife. And therefore, she also represents the covenant of her husband Abraham. That is the earthly part of the Abrahamic covenant that will generate mankind in the kingdom. Now, we notice that Sarah had a lifespan of 127 years, the only woman in the Old Testament whose age at her decease is testified. 127, well, that's the 12 tens and the 7 ones, both spiritual numbers. That's the spiritual seed. Esther, she married a king that was ruler over 127 provinces. Noah, remember this picture from yesterday? We're going to add 6 days on where they were in the ark before it rained. Total period in the ark, 381 days. What does that mean? Total period in the ark, 381 days, 3 times 127, perhaps showing the three ages, like the three mothers. that are involved in the development of the seed of Abraham. Well, we had much more to say. We'd like to explain that our house from heaven is our spiritual house that we're going to receive. We'd like to talk about how the houses of the Levites were actually redeemed in the Jubilee. Now, we think of the Jubilee as having occasion to bless mankind, to restore them to their earthly inheritance. But the Levites, you know, had no inheritance in the land. But the Levites also benefited from the Jubilee because their houses were redeemed and supplied to them in the Jubilee. And our house from heaven, our spiritual body, is going to be our blessing when the antitypical Jubilee comes. When did that start to be granted to the brethren who had been faithful and were waiting in death? Not until the Lord's return. So when we suggest to us that the Jubilees, in a sense, take us to 1874, well, there's a time marker that does show that. I think that's really for the church. In a sense, it takes you to 1878 and 1948. I think that's Israel as a return to their favors. And in the sense that Ezekiel 41, that starts a ministry of the whole nine chapters of the kingdom, are about the world of mankind, and that was on the Jubilee Day. I think that's the world of mankind in the kingdom. We won't talk about the rest of it. We'll just go to our last slide, the chart of the ages. There it is, patriarchal age, when God appeared to our father Abraham. And he made clear God's plan of rescuing everyone that has ever or would ever live. Now, Adam had a little hint of that when he heard that the serpent would be crushed and bruised, and the seed of the woman would bring some deliverance. But it really wasn't that clear until God told Abraham, "In thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed." Taking a long time, the Jewish age, the gospel age of 2,000 years plus, the millennial age, 1,000 years, but the wait is well worth it. Everyone is going to become part of the seed of Abraham. Have faith and rejoice. Thank you.